Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm just glad that I'm not. I went to the
This is Bishop Turner, and I want to come to you. We're talking about the vibe throughout the world, what's going on. And I want to say to you that we feel that we must come together as people to make things happen. Don't forget, I'm concerned about your church and your family. I'm concerned about you being blessed. I'm concerned about those who look for you. Yes, I want you to know that we can change what's going on in Chicago, Detroit, California, what's going on over the world. This is Bishop Turner. I want you to know that. And they just want to come to you and let you know that I'm concerned about your family and problems. And I'm concerned about you. If you call me and I call you, you just need to communicate with each other. Wherever you might be, with God, all things are possible. Don't forget, give me a call. Don't forget, I will pray with you and for you. And whatever you need, God can grant you your need. And I want you to know, we must begin to network and work together to make things happen for your home, my home, your business. I want to let you know your business about to flow. I'll tell you that the things that are going on can work out for you right now. I'm glad to come to you. I want to say this to you today, wherever I live. All is well. And I want to say it again. All is well for you. The new job. And the things that you're trying to do, I'm trying to let you know that God got your back. This is Bishop Turner. I want you to know that whatever you're going through, if you're trying to retire or you're trying to get a new job, you're just trying to work on your health, I want to be with you every step of the way. Your miracle is on its way. Your blessing is on its way. I want to take this time to say your blessing is a moment away. I want to take this time to say that you can get what you want. You can have what you want. I want to say that to you, and I want you to know, evening, night, day, east, west, north, and south, I'm going to pray for you. It don't get too dark. It don't get too rainy. It don't get too much snow. Winter, I'm going to pray that your blessing come through. Let me say it again. I'm going to pray that your blessing come through right now. I want you to go knowing, sowing, and flowing in the right direction. Direction that you can be successful in the trillion-dollar flow. You can be a part of the million-dollar club right here on Blog Talk Radio, where I'm on 5 days a week, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. I'm on air. You can get me Monday at 10 to 11. We're talking about Martin Luther King movement. Tuesdays, crossing over with our ancestors. We're talking about things that have lost, you have found, and subjects that will be coming up. And then on Wednesday, we go deep in the Bible. We talk about Bible class. We talk about the 66 books of the Bible, and we want you to go knowing and sowing with them. And on Thursday, we talk about metaphysics of the Bible. Body, mind, soul, and spirit. And Friday, payday, trillion-dollar flow. More money. We talk about the issues of the world, the money issues, the mental issues, what's going on all over the world. We talked about that. I want to thank Brother Calvin, my engineer. I want to thank all the ministers that have been working with us, going to back. Well, don't forget, it's very important, Sunday morning from 11 to 12, I'm preaching the word of God. I'm prophesying the word of God. I'm talking about right now your blessing, your miracle, your healing. And every Sunday morning from 11 to 12, you ought to be there in the internet with me. Get a cup of coffee, get some tea, and sit back, tell your husband, tell your wife, and we're going to listen to Bishop Sunday morning from 11 to 12. And I want you to know all is well. This is your bishop. I'm your computer bishop. You can download me. You can get me 24/7. And then you can see me on live screen. I'm screaming. And then after that, you can go to YouTube. We're talking about crossing over the ancestors. We're talking about things losing planes. And we're talking about some of the storms, the floods, the snow. We're talking about all of that on YouTube. And I just want you to call a friend, call a neighbor to listen to this show. Call somebody to be. And I might have a word for you this morning. This evening, God might give me, sometimes God calls your name. When God calls your name, I tell you what's going on. So he calls your name. When he calls your name, he give me your address. Sometimes he give me the city that you're in. Sometimes he give me what's going to happen to you. I do divine prophecy, and divine comes from God. And as I give messages right now, even in this promo, I'm seeing somebody being healed in their side, and I want to speak to that healing in your side. I want to speak to somebody been having an irregular heartbeat. I claim the healing right now. I ain't talking about now. And somebody been having burning in their eye. You're healing right now. Somebody been having burning up in their stomach. Feels like their stomach is boiling. I speak healing to that stomach right now. I speak healing to that hearing situation right now. I speak peace in that family where they've been arguing and fussing. I speak peace right now in the mighty name of Jesus. I speak it. It is done. Don't forget, Sunday morning, Saturday night. Sunday morning, come and be blessed from 11 to 12. God, if you meet me and I meet you, God got a word for you. And the word is, whatever he got for you, I'm going to tell you. God bless you. I want you to know and so on.
Lord, whatever you're doing in this season, please don't do it without me. Don't do it without me. You got to tell it for yourself. Lord, whatever you're doing in this season, please. Don't do it without me.
Come on, help me say it.
Lord, whatever you're doing in this season, please don't do it.
You gotta tell them for yourself. You gotta tell them for yourself.
Don't do it.
Healing.
Healing.
I know you're healing.
Healing.
thing by lot because Dr. Lodge got the just as a complement to this title, the meaning of that house, we will refer you to a passage which reads, and Ethiopia shall stretch forth her wings. In his book, Where Do We Go From Here? We are our community. The beloved and lamented Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. tells a story of the beginning of the slogan, Black Power. James Meredith had just been shot outside of Memphis, Tennessee. As he attempted to lead a march through the state of Mississippi, beginning at Memphis and ending at Jackson, Mississippi, the capital of the state. After getting the news that Meredith had been shot, Dr. King, Stokely Carmichael, and Floyd McKissick met together at Memphis and agreed that the march would continue, and it would be sponsored jointly by CORE, SNCC, and SCLC, with the understanding that all other civil rights organizations would be invited to join. It was also agreed that they issue a national call for support and participation. Dr. King Father says, as the days progress, debates, discussions continue. They were usually pushed to the background by the artworks of enthusiasm intended by the large crowd, and turned out to greet them in every time. Said he, we'd been marching for about 10 days when we passed through Grenada, Mississippi, on our way to Greenwood, Mississippi. Stokely could not conceal his eagerness to reach Greenwood, for this was SNCC, in the sense that the organization had worked courageously during the turbulent summer of 1964. Dr. King continues, as we approach the city, large crowds of old friends and new turned out to welcome as a huge mass meeting was held that night, which was held in a city park. Stokely mounted the platform and asked around to the audience with a powerful attack on Mississippi justice. He proclaimed, what we need is black power. Willie Rich, the founder, leaped to the platform and shouted, what do we want? Our black power. And again, Rich cried, what do we want? And the response was, black power. That response grew louder and louder until it reached a fever pitch. This was the beginning of the slogan,
symbolizing the most blatant abuse Thank you.
being a hewer of wood and a drawer of water. And that it was a sin to desire to be free. But the old Negro preacher told the slave, "You are not niggers. You are not slaves. You are not you, the good and the cause of honor. You are God's children. For Christ has bought souls. And by the word has a loose tongue. You are God's children. Therefore, when we think of black power, we think first of the black man, recognizing himself as a man, and as a child of God, being just a little more than God, and crowned with glory and honor. I don't have anybody here to pray with me. In the book of Genesis, the first chapter, and the 21st and the 27th verse, it is written, and God created man in his own image. In the image of God, in his image, God created he him. Male and female created he them. And it can be rightly added, brown and yellow, black and white, created he them. Oh, Lord, tell the apostle Paul that from one horse, from one common stuff, from one heart, God made all men to dwell upon the face of the earth. But the Apostle Peter famously declared that God is no respecter of persons. Therefore, when we think of black power, we think of the black man recognizing himself as a child of God and a member of the human family. Thus, we do not think of black power as black nationalism. For that means pro-black. It means the same thing that the southern white man. It means his nationalism is pro-white. No, we are not affecting the meaning of black power. To mean black nationalism, we mean something altogether different. We mean recognizing ourselves as men. We mean recognizing ourselves as children of God. On a rancho, the great African scholar takes the position that many of the black nationalists who are angrily demanding a proper separation of the races in America have black faces but yellow hearts. They are black on the outside, but inside they have a yellow streak. That's the saying goes, Lewis Martin wrote an article in the Detroit Courier. Dr. Arnold Banjo insists that some of these black nationalists are suffering from a deep and sometimes subconscious feeling of inferiority, which they are trying to cover up with tough talk and vile rhetoric. He insists, they're running away from, I'm going to be through in a minute, they are running away from competition with the white man. Or more specifically, trying to escape into
Hammering away at the iron fighting of racial exclusion. Oh, We must control the police in
the black community. We must uphold the law. You don't hear me? We must also control the cops. Removing and the people who work in these areas. Because you don't realize it, but removing the carpet is billions of dollars. You don't hear me? We must control construction in our community. We must build the buildings that are being built where we live. You don't hear me tonight? We must learn to respect and trust one another. I better say that again. But this is one of our main handicaps. We are suspicious of each other. Our white folks taught us fear and distrust and be suspicious of each other in slavery. They put the black Negroes against the bright Negroes. And they put the poor Negroes against the better to do Negroes. And they put the town Negroes against the country Negroes. And they call us to disrespect and be suspicious, you know, in terms of the southern Negroes against the northern Negroes. We've got to grow out of this mistrust and out of this fear. We've got to learn to be men and women of respect and of trust. You don't have me tonight. We've got to learn. Oh, if we cannot trust one another and be trusting outside of God, but did you know that trusting God is trusting one another? Did you know that loving God,
yeah.
is tough stuff. They've confirmed that ear ringing is shrinking your brain cells.
Just going around mouth that said how often scratching that it itch and laughing when you're not tickled. That is on the loop. We mean business now, and we are determined to gain our rightful place in God's world. That's all this whole thing is about. We aren't engaged in any negative protests and in any negative arguments with anybody. We are saying that we are determined to be men. We are determined to be people. We are saying, that we are God's children. And if we are God's children, we have to live like we are supposed to live. Now, what does all of this mean in this great period of history? Means that we've got to stay together and maintain unity. So, whenever Pharaoh wanted to prolong the period of slavery in Egypt, he had a major slavery formula for doing it. What was that? Kept the slaves fighting. Whenever something happens in Pharaoh's court, and he cannot hold the slaves in slavery, when the slaves get together, that's the beginning of getting out of slavery. Now let us maintain unity. Secondly, let us keep the issues where they are. The issue is injustice. The issue is the refusal of men to be fair and honest in its dealing with its public servants who happen to be sanitation workers. Now, we've got to keep attention on that. That's always the problem with a little violence. You know what happened the other day, and the press dealt only with the window break. I read on it. They very seldom got around to mentioning the fact that 1,300 sanitation workers are on strike, and that Memphis is not being passed, and that Mayor Loeb is in dire need of a doctor. They didn't get around. Are we going to march again? And we've got to march again. In order to put the issue where it is supposed to be. I want everybody to see the now 1,300 of God's children here. Sometimes gone hungry. Going through dark and dreary nights. Wondering how this thing is going to come out. That's the issue. We've got to say to the nation, we know how it's going to come out. When people get caught up in that which is right, and they are willing to sacrifice for it, there is no stopping point without a victory. We aren't going to let any in disarming people. They don't know what to do. I've seen them so often. I remember in Birmingham, Alabama, we were in that domestic struggle there. We would move out of the 16th and back to the 30th day after day. And the 100 we would move out.
We must also realize that the problems of racial injustice and economic injustice cannot be solved without a radical redistribution of political and economic power.
We read one day, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. But if a man doesn't have a job or an income, he has neither life nor liberty and the possibility for the pursuit of happiness. He merely exists.
Estimated that we spend $322,000 for each enemy we kill in Vietnam, while we spend in the so-called war on poverty in America only about $53 for each person classified as poor.
The promises of the Great Society have been shot down on the battlefield of Vietnam, making the poor, white and Negro, bear the heaviest burdens both at the front and at home.
The other thing I want you to understand is this, that it didn't cost the nation one penny to integrate lunch counts. It didn't cost the nation one penny to guarantee the right to vote. But now we are dealing with issues that cannot be solved without the nation spending billions of dollars and undergoing a radical redistribution of economic power.
Yes.
All labor has dignity.
Yes.
But you are doing another thing. You are reminding not only Memphis, but you are reminding the nation that it is a crime for people to live in this rich nation and receive starvation wages.
America's opportunity to help bridge the gulf between the haves and the have-nots. And the question is whether America will do it. There's nothing new about poverty. What is new is that we now have the techniques and the resources to get rid of poverty. And the real question is whether we have the will.
At the very same time that America refused to give the Negro any land, through an act of Congress, our government was giving away millions of acres of land in the West and the Midwest, which meant that it was willing to undergird its white peasants from Europe with an economic floor. But not only did they give the land, they built land-grant colleges with government money to teach them how to farm. Not only that, they provided county agents to further their expertise in farming. Not only that, they provided low interest rates in order that they could mechanize their farms. Not only that, today many of these people are receiving millions of dollars in federal subsidies not to farm, and they are the very people telling the black man that he ought to lift himself by his own bootstraps. Now, this is what we are faced with, and this is the reality. Now, when we come to Washington in this campaign, we are coming to get our check. I come here tonight and plead with you. Believe in yourself and believe that you're somebody. As I said to the group last night, nobody else can do this for us. No document can do this for us. No Lincolnian Emancipation Proclamation can do this for us. No Kennisonian or Johnsonian Civil Rights Bill can do this for us. If the Negro is to be free, he must move down into the inner resources of his own soul and sign with the pen and ink of self-assertive manhood his own Emancipation Proclamation. Don't let anybody take your manhood. Be proud of our heritage. As somebody said earlier tonight, we don't have anything to be ashamed of. Somebody told a lie one day. They couched it in language. They made everything black, ugly, and evil. Look in your dictionary and see the synonyms of the word black. It's always something degrading and low and sinister. Look at the word white. It's always something pure, high, and clean. But I want to get the language right tonight. I want to get the language so right that everybody here will cry out, yes, I'm black, I'm proud of it, I'm black and beautiful.
What is the relationship between this and the reality of the Negro masses?
I'm black and I'm beautiful.
But if not, there was a day when many of the Israelites found themselves in bondage in Babylon. And there was a king of Babylon by the name of Nebuchadnezzar. You read about him a good deal in the book of Daniel, and it stands as an epic that will remain stenciled on the mental sheets of unfolding generations. Nebuchadnezzar was a mighty king. And when he ruled, he ruled. And when he issued an order, he meant business. And Nebuchadnezzar issued an order. He made a golden image and his order was that everybody under the reign of his kingship had to bow before that golden image and worship it. Now, those of you who read the Bible remember that story. One day, Nebuchadnezzar called in the judges and the governors and the sheriffs, and they had a dedicatory service for this golden image. And then he said to them, I'm instructing you to see that everybody bows before this golden image. There were three young men around there. One's name was Shadrach. The other one's name was Meshach. And the other name was Abednego. And they answered, and I read it from the scripture, and said to the king, O Nebuchadnezzar, we are not careful to answer thee in this manner. If it be so, our God, whom we serve, is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, and he will deliver us out of thine hand, O King. But if not, be it known unto thee, O King, that we will not serve thy gods, nor worship the golden image which thou hast set up. Now I want you to notice first here that these young men practiced civil disobedience. Civil disobedience is the refusal to abide by an order of the government or of the state or even of the court that your conscience tells you is unjust. Civil disobedience is based on a commitment to conscience. In other words, one who practices civil disobedience is obedient to what he considers a higher law. And then there comes a time when a moral man can obey a law which his conscience tells him is unjust. And I tell you this morning, my friends, that history has moved on. Great moments have often come forth because there were those individuals in every age and every generation who were willing to say, I will be obedient to a higher law. These men were saying, I must be disobedient to a king in order to be obedient to the king. And those people who so often criticize those of us who come to those moments when we must practice civil disobedience never remember that even right here in America, in order to get free from the oppression and the colonialism of the British Empire, our nation practiced civil disobedience. For what represented civil disobedience more than the Boston Tea Party? Never forget that everything that Hitler did in Germany was legal. It was legal to do everything that Hitler did to the Jews. It was a law in Germany that Hitler issued himself that it was wrong and illegal to aid and comfort a Jew in Hitler's Germany. But I tell you, if I had lived in Hitler's Germany with my attitude, I would have openly broken that law.
Make it plain.
I would have practiced civil disobedience. And so it is important to see that there are times when a man-made law is out of harmony with the moral law of the universe. There are times when human laws are out of harmony with eternal and divine laws. And when that happens, you have an obligation to break it. And I'm happy that in breaking it, I have some good company. I have Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. I have Jesus and Socrates.
I have all of the early Christians who refused to bow. Now the second interesting point is that these men never doubted God and his power as they did what they did. They made it very clear that they knew that God had the power to spare them. They said that to the king. Now we know that the God that we worship is able to deliver us. And that grew out of their experience. They had known God. They had experienced God in nature. They knew God as the creator. And then they had seen God in history.
Yes. Make it plain.
And then they had seen God, I'm sure, in their personal lives.
Yes. Amen.
They never doubted God's power to deliver them. Let me move now to the basic point of the message. And oh, this morning, if we forget everything I said, I hope you won't forget this. It came to the point after saying our God is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace. But if he doesn't deliver us, we still are not going to bow. But if not, do you get that? And these men were saying that our faith is so deep and that we've found something so dear and so precious that nothing can turn us away from it. Our God is able to deliver us, but if not, this simply means, my friends, that the ultimate test of one's faith is his ability to say, but if not. You see, there is what you may call an if faith, and there is a though faith. And the permanent faith, the lasting, the powerful faith, is the though faith. Now, the if faith says, if all goes well, if life is hopeful, prosperous, and happy, if I don't have to go to jail, if I don't have to face the agonies and burdens of life, if I'm not ever called bad names because of taking a stand that I feel that I must take, if none of these things happen, then I'll have faith in God. Then I'll be all right. That's the if faith. You know, a lot of people have the if faith. Jacob found himself in that dilemma once, and his faith was contingent on an if. And he said, now, if God will be with me, and if he will keep me in this way that I go, and if God will give me bread to eat and raiment to put on that I come again to my father's house in peace, then shall the Lord be my God. That's the if faith. Jacob hadn't quite gotten to the essence of religion. There is a though faith, though. And the though faith says, though things go wrong, though evil is temporarily triumphant.
Yes.
Though sickness comes and the cross looms,
yes.
Nevertheless, I'm going to believe anyway, and I'm going to have faith anyway. Though the waters thereof roar and be troubled, though the mountains shake with the swelling thereof, the Lord of hosts is with us. The God of Jacob is our refuge. And old Job got to that point, and he had a though faith. He looked out, and everything that he had been taken away from him. And even his wife said to him, now, what you ought to do, Brother Job, is to curse God and die.
Yes.
God has been unkind to you. And you should have let God know a long time ago that you would only follow him if he allowed you to stay rich.
Yes. Make it plain.
If he allowed your cattle to stay in place, you ought to curse him and die, Job, because he hadn't treated you right. But Job said, honey, I'm sorry, but my faith is deeper than that.
Yes.
Though he slay me,
yes.
Yet will I trust him. My faith is a full faith.
Yes.
And this is the essence of life and religion. The question is whether you have an if faith,
yes.
Or whether you have a though faith. You know what this says in substance, that ultimately, religion is not a bargaining matter.
Yes.
A lot of people bargain with God.
Amen.
If you just let me avoid pain, God. If you allow me to be happy in all of its dimensions. If you don't allow any suffering to come. If you don't allow frustrating moments to come. Then I'll be all right. I'll give you a tenth of my income, and I'll go to church, and I'll have faith in you. But religion is not a bargaining experience. It's not a commercial relationship. And you know, no great experience exist in the bargaining atmosphere. Think of friendship. Think of love. And think of marriage. These things are not based on if. They are based on though. And these great experiences are not based on a bargaining relationship. Not an if faith, but a though faith. And I'm coming to my conclusion now. And I want to say to you this morning, my friends, that somewhere along the way, you should discover something that's so dear, so precious to you, that is so eternally worthful, that you will never give it up. You ought to discover some principle.
Yes, sir.
You ought to have some great faith that grips you so much,
yes.
That you will never give it up.
Never.
Somehow you go on and say, I know that the God that I worship is able to deliver me,
yes.
But if not, I'm going on anyhow. I'm going to stand up for it anyway. What does this mean? It means in the final analysis, you do right not to avoid hell.
Yes.
If you're doing right merely to keep from going to something that traditional theology has called hell, then you are doing right. If you do right merely to go to a condition that theologians have called heaven, you are doing right.
Yes.
If you are doing right to avoid pain and to achieve happiness and pleasure, then you are doing right.
Yes.
My. Ultimately, you must do right because it's right to do right. You got to say, but if not, you must love ultimately because it's lovely to love. You must be just because it's right to be just. You must be honest because it's right to be honest. This is what this text is saying more than anything else. And finally, you must do it because it has gripped you so much that you are willing to die for it if necessary. And I say to you this morning that if you have never found something so dear and so precious to you that you will die for it, then you aren't fit to live.
Make it plain. Make it plain.
You may be 38 years old as I happen to be. And one day some great opportunity stands before you and calls upon you to stand up for some great principle, some great issue, some great cause. You refuse to do it because you are afraid. You refuse to do it because you want to live longer. You are afraid that you will lose your job, or you are afraid that you will be criticized, or that you will lose your popularity. Are you afraid that somebody will stab you or shoot at you or bomb your house? So you refuse to take the stand. Well, you may go on and live until you are 90. But you are just as dead at 38 as you would be at 90. And the cessation of breathing in your life is but the belated announcement of an earlier death of the spirit. You died when you refused to stand up for right. You died when you refused to stand up for truth. You died when you refused to stand up for justice. These boys stand before us today. And I thank God for them. For they had found something. The fiery furnace couldn't stop them from believing it. And they said, throw us into the fiery furnace.
Yes, sir.
But you know, the interesting thing is, the Bible talks about a miracle. Because they had faith enough to say, but if not, God was with them as an eternal companion. And this is what I want to say finally. That there is a reward if you do right for righteousness' sake. It says that somehow that burning fiery furnace was transformed into an air-conditioned living room. Somebody looked in there and said, we put three in here, but now we see four. Don't ever think you're by yourself. Go on to jail if necessary, but you never go alone. Take a stand for that which is right. And the world may misunderstand you and criticize you, but you never go alone. For somewhere I read that one with God is a majority. And God has a way of transforming a minority into a majority. Walk with him this morning and believe in him and do what is right. And he'll be with you even until the consummation of the ages. Yes, I've seen the lightning flash. I've heard the thunder roll. I've felt sin breakers dashing, trying to conquer my soul. But I heard the voice of Jesus saying, still to fight on. He promised never to leave me, never to leave me alone. No, never alone. No, never alone. He promised never to leave me, never to leave me alone. Where are you going this morning, my friends? Tell the world that you're going with truth. You're going with justice. You're going with goodness. And you will have an eternal companionship. And the world will look at you. And they will understand you. For your fiery furnace will be around you. But you go on anyhow. But if not, I will not back.
God will speak it to you whatever you know. God will fix it.
That's why you're here. And then I read the scene that said his mother brought him into Africa. Of course, your book don't say Africa. It says Egypt, but the last time I saw Egypt, it was still in Africa. Because Herod was about to kill him. And then I said, let me go back further and deal with this thing that you're here to celebrate. Then I came to the point where it says the Ten Commandments by an African named Moses. His religion being Jewish. And somebody said to me, what do you mean an African named Moses? There was only one Moses, the black Moses, Isaac Hayes. And I said, I am speaking about the only kind of Moses mentioned in the book of Exodus, an African born in the city of Goshen, on the Nile. And so I said, it's easy for me. I'm coming, actually, to a homecoming celebration. Now, I'm not going to mess with theology. I'm not going to mess with that. And a man here does that very well. And like they says, when you go to court, the daughter, don't mess with the mom. And in looking in this, what I'm going to celebrate, I think of some names. Absalom Jones, as he bolted the white church and went in and discovered and founded his own black church. The black Episcopal Church. I thought of Richard Allen as he bolted the white church and found his own African Methodist Episcopal Church. Then I started to think, well, where does the Baptist come in? And I remember the name Palmer, when Palmer said, yes, they are black churches, but they do not speak to the little fellows no more than the white church, so I will start the Black Baptist Church. I can speak to everyone. This was the time when the black church was a revolutionary church, was a church that housed such names as Henry Highland Garnett, Nat Turner, Denmark Beasy, Sojourner Truth, and others. Even David Walker, who had made the master field, along with Frederick Douglass and so many others. The names of these men and women stand significantly on my mouth as I speak to you this afternoon, because they too remembered that it was not slavery that brought Christianity to you. You brought Christianity to Europe. Paul did not create Christianity. Paul was trying to explain an African-Asian religion